You're listening to Trek FM.
There was a little bar in Mill Valley where all the Starfleet trainees used to go.
The 602 Club.
You know it.
I was there more times than I can remember.
Have you felt it? The dark side. And the light.
There has been an awakening. Have you felt it? I mean, excuse me. Hey guys, welcome to Trek FM's local watering hole. I don't know where that came from. We're just going to get together. This is going to be a little bit different. This is our supplemental episode. We just kind of gathered a group, a posse, a gang of people, a group of rebels, maybe one might say, to talk about something that there was a great disturbance in the internet. And no, I'm not talking about Kim Kardashian. Star Wars decided that Thanksgiving was going to be the best time to drop a trailer on us for Episode 7. And we have all been waiting, I think, a long time now since we heard that this was going to be happening. They were actually going to do Episode 7, 8, and 9, even though we don't call them that anymore, because it's just Star Wars The Force Awakened. Guys, I'm excited to have you. First, Daniel, it's great to have you back on the 602 Club. How's it going?
It's going great. I'm happy to be back and excited to talk brand new Star Wars on the big screen. What else is there, really?
I don't know. I mean, I think for at least a good week, I saw nothing but Star Wars tweets. And I don't know. What about you, John? It's great to have you back, John Mills.
Thank you.
Welcome back to the 602.
Glad to be back. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I'm excited. And for the first time ever on podcasting, we've got Will Wynn with us. How's it going, Will?
It's going well. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I'm glad you could be here. I think that this is going to be fun. So, guys, first and foremost, Star Wars fan, and just give me maybe a minute and a half of where your fandom lies. John?
My fandom goes all the way back to when I was a wee little boy, and my father fatefully took me to go see Star Wars in the movie theater when I was knee-high to a grasshopper, and a true love was born. And I've been a Star Wars obsessive pretty much ever since. I've gone through the different stages of fandom. I've been a fan. I've been a fanatic. I've been an obsessive fanatic. And I have hit more of a mature, I would say rational fandom at this point, despite the presence of my two Star Wars tattoos.
So you would say that you're probably an Obi-Wan Kenobi style fan. You're
yes.
A fan, but, you know, you're very even-keeled about it.
I try to keep things in perspective, yes.
Okay, nice. What about you, Will?
I would say that my fandom really started with the special editions. So I was born in 1986, so that was for the most part before the actual original first-run release of the original trilogy. So I saw it, you know, after the fact when it was re-released. So I really had to develop the fandom afterwards. So when the special editions were released, it was just the explosion because it was the same time that Shadows of the Empire was being released. So I remember that was new Star Wars, right? But it was new Star Wars except for the movie. So they had the toys, the comics, the video games, and that's where I kind of settled in. And for me, the Star Wars fandom was always X-Wing, TIE Fighter, Rogue Squadron, X-Wing Alliance, those old flight sim games. But to John's point, I also have a Star Wars tattoo, actually. It's the Rebel Alliance statue right up here. And, you know, before Star Trek, there was Star Wars. So a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away, before warp cores, there was always Star Wars. And obviously, I think for me, my fandom has definitely shifted towards Star Trek. But, you know, there will always be Star Wars first and foremost.
Daniel, how about you?
Well, I myself, like Will here, 1986 born, but I do remember having the VHS tapes right before the special editions came out. And so to me, Star Wars has always been around. It's always been part of my nerddom. But I'm so glad that he mentioned Shadows of the Empire. Oh, my goodness. Let's get some Dash Rendar in these new movies. Come on, that would be fantastic.
The Outrider,
any of those classic... any of those classic Star Wars games, man, oh my goodness, it's such a huge part of my childhood. So I, you know, there was a time, and I probably can't do it now, but there was a time, the original trilogy, I could recite line for line. It's been a while since I've actually watched them, but also a huge fan ever since I was a kid growing up. So I could not be more excited to live more in this universe and to see more of what we can get.
Well, and it is funny for me, you know. I remember watching. I'm born in 79, so it was VHS for me. I just passed the points of I missed it. You know, I didn't get to see Return of the Jedi in the theater or anything like that. But very quickly after that, you know, the VHS was there, and for my, I'm pretty sure it was my 8th birthday, we watched all 3 movies in one night. And that night, fandom was born for me. And I didn't even know about Star Trek really yet. For me, the Wars was the first thing that I became an obsessive fan about. And, you know, at that point, there aren't any toys. There's nothing out there anymore, you know, unless you find it in secondhand stores or a friend of yours maybe had some or something like that. So, you know, the special editions came out. And, of course, I loved it because it meant all the toys were back. And then, of course, George decides in 99, you know, to give us The Phantom Menace and then Attack of the Clones and Revenge of the Sith. And then know what was going to happen. And then I fell in love with the Clone Wars movie. The moment it came out in the theater, I went and saw it. I thought, this is fantastic. I really love this. And then Disney bought Star Wars and destroyed the Clone Wars. And I was pissed. Because I really love that show. To me, like, I wanted more of that. And, you know, we got Rebels now. It's great. I enjoy it. And we've got a brand new trailer to talk about. So, for you guys, first impressions, I mean, we only have 88 seconds. And really, there's only about 30 or so seconds of actual footage. So we've seen less than, like, maybe, what, 100th of this film, if that. So there's not really a lot to go on, but it does give some impressions. Daniel, what do you think?
Oh, boy. I'll start off, I guess, huh? Overall, positive experience, right? You're pulled in right away by this stormtrooper. What's going on? He's what's happening? I don't know. Right. And then I don't know. I'm not going to recant the whole trailer right now, but I think it's a positive experience overall.
You could do it like Arnold. So the man, he is getting up and he is in. Oh, there he is. He just stands up in the desert and he is worried. And then, oh, there are some stormtroopers. Oh, wait. Before the stormtroopers, I forgot there is the little droid ball.
I could do that. I probably won't do that. But. You know, it walking away from the trailer, basically, especially the tail end of the trailer, the last seconds that we get with the John Williams score, I didn't any problems I had with the trailer were completely erased, and I was like, that's the Millennium Falcon, people, don't you understand? It's going to be in the movie theater again. Like, I was just, I do have some problems with the trailer overall, but to me, it's just like, this is Star Wars. I felt that Star Wars vibe, and I was excited, and I cannot wait to see the full trailer whenever it's released later on down the line.
What about you, John?
I watched it alone first. I was out for a run, and a friend of mine, like, I knew they were going to do it. They were going to release it when I wasn't paying attention, because I spent that whole morning. I was like, is it up? Is it up? Is it up? Is it up? And it wasn't up. So I go out, I get a text message. And I'm like, oh, I knew they were going to do this. So I get back. I watched it once alone. And yes, the moment where, you know, the Falcon bursts onto screen does tug at the heartstrings. You're like, oh, there it is. And the earlier stuff was intriguing. No mistake about that. But then I showed it to my kids, and my kids were kind of like, yeah, okay, that's all right. And I was like, okay, well, all right. Well, I think that all of us are spending a lot of time hammering on a teaser trailer. Did it accomplish what it was supposed to? By the end of the trailer, I said to myself, you know, the colors look right. The framing looks right. The Falcon flight movement is different than what has been done before. You know, we've never chased the Falcon quite like this in an atmospheric environment before, like doing the loops and everything. So we know that we're going to get treated to some sort of like big acrobatic aerial sequence. And the movies have always been about delivering those sort of, you know, slam bang pow chase scenes and battles. I was most intrigued, most hopeful coming out of the trailer because of what I thought at the time was Benedict Cumberbatch's voice, but it didn't matter that it was Benedict Cumberbatch. I just thought it was a cool bad guy voice. When I later found out it was Andy Serkis, I was like, wow, man, you really nailed that. So I enjoyed that. Seeing it the third time, I realized it's structured in a lot of ways the way the Into Darkness trailer was. Because you have this evil bad guy voice talking over, and it almost has the same sort of meter to the dialogue of, you think you're safe, you are not. Like, it has that feeling to it of, you know, there's been an awakening and everything. So I would say that the trailer accomplished what it needed to, and it looks and feels good overall. So, you know, it's a success so far as I'm concerned.
Will, how about you?
So for me, I think that the trailer really restored a sense of surprise and wonder. I think I was really used to the prequels kind of baking the cake in terms of my expectations. So this trailer really subverted my expectations because there's, for the first time, a black guy, you know, a black stormtrooper. And I'm so used to personally seeing, you know, white faces in Star Wars. And usually when I see a non-white face, it's usually Samuel L. Jackson or Billy Dee Williams. So seeing the very fact that John Boyega, who was in the fantastic Attack the Block, that he is right front center. He's a stormtrooper, so it subverts the idea of maybe he's not Jango's clone. Maybe he's an imposter, kind of like Luke, pretending to be a stormtrooper. Maybe he is an Imperial stormtrooper. So right there in that opening shot, it subverts all my expectations, and I think in the best possible way. Because for me, going into Star Wars, I think for me, my expectations were just so like low in comparison to what I've seen in the past. I didn't want to be disappointed. But having that entry point of John Boyega, he's surprised, you know, seeing that, it was just like, wow, I am hooked right from the get-go. So that's my initial impressions. I think everything else has the trappings of what you feel Star Wars to be. It's got the classic X-Wing with the really, it has the homage of the old X-Wing helmets, but clearly it's an evolution, the clear Rebel Alliance symbol. You have the X-Wings. They look so familiar, and yet there's something different about them. You have the Millennium Falcon, but if you notice, its radar dish is different. It's not the circular radar dish. It's rectangular. Is that a callback to when the dish was lost in the Death Star, the final run into the second Death Star? It's those little callbacks that make it familiar, but it all starts with that first, you know, expectation bending moment. For me, it was great.
I think it is interesting what you're saying, and one of the things I just kind of wanted to mention is that at this point, and even beforehand in the original series, and the original trilogy, none of the stormtroopers are clones at that point. They're all just recruits. And so I never expected that everybody looked the same under those helmets anymore.
the discussion about the stormtroopers has always intrigued me, especially in terms of like with the trailer and everything right now, because until Rebels came out, there was nothing on screen to dissuade us that the troopers were still clones. In my headcanon, once it was established in the prequels that they were clones, I said, oh, okay, they're still clones. They're, you know, different person's clones or different people's clones because Jango died. And the original was destroyed. And so, you know, whatever happened, happened, but they were still, whether different batches of clones or different guy was, whatever. It wasn't until Rebels really shattered that on screen, because Rebels is considered canon, everything else was expanded universe. So in my head canon, I would always ignore the expanded universe stuff, because in terms of watching the films, I mean, even when I was growing up, I thought that the troopers were all the same person. You know, the uniformity of their outfits and height and all of that stuff spoke to me. I mean, you know, when I guess I'm the oldest one of the group here. A lot of us as kids, we speculated for a while that they were robots. We had no reason to believe differently. But then, you know, of course, you know, they're not. I think that it's fair for somebody to be taken very off guard by the idea that the troopers aren't clones. I don't know that John Boyega being in the outfit says that they're not. But, you know, if it does, if there's conscripts, I think the more interesting possibility with the troopers with the new trilogy is whether they're conscripts or clones, are they actually agents of the Empire? Or has the Republic turned into meet the new boss, same as the old boss? Has it become corrupt by this point? That's sort of the thought that pops into my head with the troopers.
And when I said that too, I was going directly off of what, you know, Dave Filoni has said. You know, and he's the creator of the Clone Wars and now Rebels, and has worked with George, you know, had worked with him for over 10 years. So it was just something that I've heard him say before, and he's reiterated too, especially with, you know, what we've seen in the trailer. You know, for me, my first impressions were honestly probably just this. Huh. That was my first impression. I wasn't blown away. I wasn't really excited, unfortunately. You know, I there were, unlike you, John, I felt the JJ-ness of this trailer, and I didn't feel any George, and that worried me a lot, because this is not a standalone Star Wars film. This is Episode 7. And therefore, it really needs to feel like the other two trilogies, or else it's going to just be out of place. You know, the standalone films are the places for people to do something a little bit different with Star Wars, but the you know, an episode of the saga needs to feel like the ones that came before it. And so George definitely opened up the world a lot to give you a lot of different options with the prequels, but at the same time, we're also in that very lived-in universe again. It's not the pristine look of the Republic. We're back to, they're trying to rebuild, and we have no idea what's going to go on. So, yeah, for me, it was just kind of like, huh, okay. I loved the Falcon and the music at the end. You know, John Williams is a genius. And anytime that music comes on the screen, that's fun and exciting to me. But everything else, I was just like, okay. So I think this is probably really kind of a good time to just jump into those things that you did love about the trailer. Like, what is it that, if there was anything, what got your heart racing, Will?
So I think I mentioned it before. It was really just seeing, you know, the X-Wings. It was seeing the Millennium Falcon, seeing the TIE Fighter, seeing that Stormtrooper armor, you know, this change in terms of, you know, the facial, I think the black and how it was painted on is clearly different, but it's clearly evocative of perhaps a darker stormtrooper, a new design aesthetic, but it was still obviously very much the same stormtroopers we know and love. And I think just seeing those little elements, you know, it didn't take much. I think that's that's why the trailer, you know, has that impact. Is I think for most people, we were just waiting to see a new take on what we've already come to love about the original trilogy. I think that's why most people, it was welcomed so warmly, in that, you know, it felt so familiar. It wasn't Pod Racers. It wasn't Boss Nass. It wasn't all these new things. We were trying to reconcile that it is Star Wars. It's these visual touchstones that we immediately see. Yes, Star Wars, got it, I'm sold. So that's what I enjoyed about it.
What about you, John?
Well, there, you know, I think sometimes people forget that, you know, Kirshner brought his own aesthetic, more camera movement, different lighting. And with Return of the Jedi, which admittedly Lucas had much more of a heavy hand in as a producer, Marquand still had some visual touches. So there was not a uniformity to the visuals. So I, Matt, to speak to, you know, sort of your earlier point, yeah, there are aspects of this that look and feel, you can tell it's a J.J. Abrams movie, even from the little bits that you've seen, but blended in such a way that visually these shots I can reconcile. Now, Will, to speak to sort of the prequels thing, is I think that the most concerning thing, and I know we're talking about the positives, but the positives are both, are also a potential negative to me about the trailer, because one of the things I did love about the prequels, because I do love the prequels, is the fact that they defied my expectations. They took the story in a direction that I couldn't expect and that I truly enjoyed watching. My greatest fear about these movies, and the trailer gave a hint that this might turn out to be the case, is that Star Wars fans are going to get what they've been asking for. And, you know, since we are in the 602 Club, I'll call out to Uhura in Star Trek 3, where she says, be careful what you wish for. You just might get it. And so with the teaser, I think that there is a real positive in terms of what it shows, that it's a continuation of the story, while at the same time not focusing on the old characters, saying, here are two characters that you're going to have to care about that have nothing to do with what's come before. But at the same time, there are enough elements hearkening back to the previous ones that you can still have that little bit of trepidation of, is this just going to be a two-hour love poem to what we all grew up with? I don't want that. I want it to follow the ring structure. I want it to be a tone poem the way Lucas always intended. So there you go.
What about you, Daniel?
Just real quick, John, I don't think anybody asked for a mini ball rolling R2-D2. So it may be not everything in the trailer is what people expect. I'm teasing you, but I'm just kidding. But actually, to me, the two strongest elements, honestly, are the opening, the Stormtrooper opening. Actually, both the Stormtrooper moments, the Stormtrooper opening and the Stormtrooper squadron, or whatever you would call them, inside the drop ship. I was excited about that. I don't know what's going on. Why do we care about a group of Stormtroopers, you know, aside from, like you said, Matt, the Clone Wars or anything like that? But why would we care about this group of people, unless presumably maybe that character is on that ship? And then the ending. So it's the beginning and the ending that really gets me exciting. In the beginning, it looks like a familiar location. But apparently, by all accounts, not Tatooine. I don't know. That's what I've heard.
It's Tatooine. No,
it has been established.
It's got to be Tatooine. There's no way that's not Tatooine.
I agree with you. But, you know, I think they're John Harris. John Harriman-ing us again. So that kind of thing. But anyways. But the beginning and the end, where it is, there are elements of Star Wars, but maybe tweaked a little bit. Like John said, it's kind of a positive and a negative. Sometimes that works and sometimes it doesn't. And we'll get into what doesn't work. But this, the new Stormtrooper look, and maybe this, the new Falcon kind of movement and activity, does kind of work for me. But I was gripped from the beginning and I got excited at the end. The middle was kind of meh for me.
You know, I think that The thing that I responded to, and it I responded to it with 2009 Star Trek and in Into Darkness was, you know, JJ knows how to make a good-looking movie. And they used a lot of real stuff even in the Star Trek movies as much as they could to make it feel real. So JJ likes to do that, but JJ also loves to use CGI to his heart's content. The best part that he's got now is that Lucas honestly pioneered CGI in the prequels so that we could have what we have now, to where it looks so fantastic we don't even question it anymore. It doesn't have any kind of any bit of it that we're like, oh, is that CGI? We know it is, but it looks so good it doesn't even matter. And I think that's one of the things that this, when I think of things I like about this trailer, is it looks great. It really does. And even the things that I don't like about the trailer, it still looks good, which, again, JJ's really good at making things look great. So that, for me, I'm excited. And again, for me, it was hearing the John Williams music. I mean, that's new music at the very beginning, even though it's just like some bum, bum, bum. That's new. And then it is a new recording of the theme, you know, with just sounds fantastic. Bombastic is as good as ever. So that's a thing that I'm really glad, you know, that's Star Wars. You know, without John Williams, you don't have Star Wars. You just have something else. And so he's just as integral as anything. And Falcon. I mean, it's the Falcon. I love the Millennium Falcon, and I don't know how you couldn't love that. And I think that's a real strong point for this trailer and something that I really liked. And John, I liked what you said because, you know, fans getting what they want is always a bad thing, I think, in the end, because we don't really know what we want. We think we do, and then we get it, and we're like, oh, I don't really like that. You know, that's usually what ends up happening. We don't really know, and that's where I think the best storytellers give us the unexpected, and JJ is in the same position that, you know, in a lot of ways that Lucas was with the prequels. There's a ton of expectation, and yet at the same time, he also has a little bit more open canvas at this point. You know, Lucas is kind of bound by having to get to the original trilogy. They're just making this stuff up at this point. You know, I mean, they're using whatever George gave them, and they're putting together a story, and, you know, making something what they want to make. There's no, you know, how much George had a say and where they were going to go with the three films for the episodes, nobody really knows. We know he gave them the story treatments, and how that played out, who knows? So, but they're very much in a lot of ways the same position. You know, fans are going to have really high expectations, and I'm sure in the end, half the fans will love it, and half the fans will be like, eh, you know? So it's a hard thing, and I'm just hoping, this is the other thing that I loved, is that in 2009, JJ defied my expectations and made me love his first Star Trek movie. I'm not talking about Into Darkness, but specifically 2009, I loved that movie and went and saw it twice in one day because I liked it so much. And I'm hoping that, you know, he can bring that over as well to Star Wars, because I was in that same position. Like, you're going to do more Star Trek, and there's no Shatner, there's no Nimoy, what? You know, like, he's not even playing with any of those parts except for the fact that then he brought in Nimoy, and I was like, okay. So he really is playing the same game again in Star Wars. Like, he's bringing the old people in to pass it off to the new people. So I just think it's funny. And if there's one thing that I love, it's not so much about the trailer, but that's being carried over. And he was able to do something that I really enjoyed. So that's my positiveness there. Were there some things for you as you watched 88 seconds of... Well, okay, so when you watched 30 seconds of actual footage, were there any things that you didn't like, or that did kind of, like, give you a pause to think, I'm not quite sure if Yeah, I'm not sure this works. What about you, John?
No. God's honest answer right there. No, there was nothing in there that made me go, there's not a chance this... No. I have trepidation about X or Y because of, you know, like you said, expectation setting and everything like that. But there is nothing in this trailer that says that is a red flag to me that says, stop, really think about going to see this. There's nothing in there like that.
What about you, Will?
You know, if we're just doing this exercise just to, I think, find something to kind of, that's perhaps tweak, I like John said, it's not a red flag. But I think for me, it's just one of those, Tatooine again. You know, we're seeing this desert planet again, and I know that obviously Tatooine has significance in the mythos. It has significance for lots of reasons, and it's very much a visual touchstone too. It was wise for them to use this trailer in that way to show that, you know, this is Tatooine that we have seen before. But it's something that I have always felt in a lot of franchises, Star Trek and Star Wars included. It's almost like a small universe syndrome where it's always the same set of planets. It's always the same set of characters, or they all happen to know each other, or they happen to know someone that knows everyone else. And obviously it's possibly the most minute nitpick possible. But when I saw, Tatooine, I'm like, oh, Tatooine again. It's going to be, are they going to do the escape pod sequence again? It's going to be the type of, bizarre, Watto's Bazaar, or that type of, alien milieu that we saw in the prequels, that we saw in the original trilogy. It's a huge galaxy. So, obviously it's only 88 seconds. So clearly there's going to be other planets. There's clearly going to be Coruscant and other planets like that. But seeing Tatooine again, I'm just like, oh, here we go. Here we go again. So like I said, it's the most minor nitpick, but I think out of 88 seconds, that's probably going to be the only thing that I would take issue with.
Daniel, what about you?
Okay, I guess I have two big problems with the teaser. Number one is, what is JJ's problem with space? Does he just not like space? He doesn't like putting spaceships in space. Like, we get both the X-Wings and the Millennium Falcon, like, ridiculously, insanely close to the ground. And the same thing with the Into Darkness, not only Into Darkness trailer, but the Into Darkness movie overall. He puts the Enterprise underwater, which some people had a problem with. I didn't have a problem with it at the time, but now it's like, why do you need to put X-Wings literally inches? This is a Star Wars trailer, and we get no space shots at all. Okay, it's an 88-second teaser. Fine, I'll grant you that. But why do we need to put spaceships, like, inches? Like, we have all these X-Wings traveling inches above the ground. Maybe there's a plausible reason in the plot. I don't know.
It's just like Rogue Squadron.
It is a lot like Rogue Squadron. That's a good point. I was irritated by that. I was like, at first it was the X-Wings. I'm like, fine, maybe they're like, they have to go under radar or something. I don't know, even though it doesn't make sense in the Star Wars universe. And then, like, immediately after that, it's like, here's the Millennium Falcon, like, doing corkscrews 25 feet above the dunes. I'm like, why do we have to do this? Sorry, I'm sorry. That irritated me a little bit. And I know there has been some talk about this, but this was honestly the first thing I said to the people I was talking to when I watched the trailer was, that's a stupid lightsaber. That doesn't,
boo.
I don't, this doesn't make
boo.
Any, it,
boo.
I'm sorry, it makes no
boo.
Sense. It's the dumbest thing I've
it's,
ever seen
it's
in my
taken
life.
Us 35 minutes, we've gotten to the heart of it.
Oh my God,
listen,
come
listen,
on.
Listen, this is what that scene reeked of to me. Darth Maul did something new and interesting. Episode 1 did something interesting with the lightsaber. How do we make the lightsaber cool again? How do we really trip people out about this? And it's like, we could have tiny baby lightsabers coming off the sides, and then that will be cool. And it's like, no. This reeks of you, like, trying to improve on a classic, iconic weapon. Just don't bother. Just let it go, man. You can just make it a lightsaber.
No. Okay? I've listened to this lightsaber nonsense for long enough after this trailer. Okay? More than half of the design decisions, if not all the design decisions in the Star Wars saga up to this point, they are made with a fair amount of whimsy to them just because it looks cool. And I think that it speaks more about us as fans that, yeah, Lucas tried to top himself all the time. So that is why the double-bladed saber came in. was he was trying to top himself. And that's why ship designs evolved. And that's why the Super Star Destroyer was there instead of just the regular Star Destroyer and Empire Strikes Back. And that's why, oh, the Death Star 2 looks so badass compared to the original Death Star. It looked like a big, mean Cyclops. Arr, 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 arr. All of this stuff comes, and Dexter Jetster with the four arms. It's a great design, and it's all whimsy. The dewbacks are whimsy. The ball, like, the lightsaber and the ball droid in this preview actually, like, warmed my heart because I was like, oh, cool, there's a sense of fun. Who cares why those cross blades are on there? It looks like a broadsword, and it's pulsing. And I know when I see this guy turn this thing on, that's bad news, man. That is, nothing good's going to come of this. And that's awesome because he's the bad guy, and nothing good should come about when he turns on his lightsaber. And the ball droid, I love the soccer ball droid.
They're going to merchandise the heck out of that thing.
I'm sure they
are. Darn tootin'.
I mean, people already have tattoos of the soccer ball droid. Literally seen it. So, you know, I, Daniel, my first reaction was you were with the lightsaber. I didn't like it because it felt fan wanky. I just feel like it was a fan film. That's what, that was my first impression. What I, when I heard some people talking though online, I heard them say maybe the bad guy in this film, you know, obviously the, there's been an awakening. Have you felt it? You know, this idea that the Force has awakened on the dark side and the light. There has been a reawakening of the Force in a way that hasn't happened yet, which, you know, again, defies all my expectations because I immediately think that this is going to be a little bit like the EU and that Luke will have set up a Jedi temple and he's starting to train guys and everything. So apparently that's not what's happened. So already my expectations are being defied. My thought that I just kind of gleaned from reading was, what if this guy is he's a Sith fanboy? And he's created basically his own lightsaber, and the reason it looks like it does is because it's not really stable. You know, it pulses and it looks different because, you know, a real Jedi lightsaber, or even a Sith saber, has a consistent beam, and it shines consistently. You know, that's one of the hallmarks of a true lightsaber. And so the idea that this could be a lightsaber from, you know, somebody that created it and it doesn't have all of the knowledge of, say, a Luke or anybody else who's created a lightsaber for real, that's kind of exciting to me. So for me, the other thing I had to remember is, like, this is 30 seconds of a movie and I know absolutely nothing about the rest of it. I don't know the story. I don't know the characters. I don't know what's going to happen. All I know is that the original cast is back with Chewie. And that's about it. You know, they're going to have the Falcon. They're going to have X-Wings. And, you know, apparently they're going to be back on Tatooine. Apparently Daisy Ridley rides a fudgesicle. you know, which to me, that was the other thing. Some designs in Star Wars have been crazy. But with speeders, George always liked, like, the, you know, he likes cars. And he likes fast-looking things. And that thing just looks ridiculous.
It's like an Astro minivan.
But yeah, it was like an Astro minivan in Star Wars. But hey, again, we're on Tatooine and people don't really have a lot. So, you know, I had to check my brain in the sense of my fan brain and everything else and realize I don't really know. And I try to be like John, I think, in a lot of ways. I need to be Obi-Wan Kenobi at this point. And I need to just come in to the movie with a cool head, watch it. And if I don't like the finished product, that's different than judging what I don't honestly even know. And I just had to remind myself of that because I didn't have a strong emotional reaction to this trailer, which is I really wanted. I'm a huge Star Wars fan. I mean, my wife and I are rewatching all the Star Wars that's been out. So we, except for the holiday special. Okay. So we've made
through
the first.
You're cheating.
Yeah,
that's not,
well, maybe
complete,
we'll get there. You know, we got to find it online first. so we watched the first two prequels, and now we're watching through the Clone Wars chronologically before we get to Episode 3. So, I mean, we're doing the whole thing here, and we've been watching Rebels together. And so I love Star Wars, and, you know, so far, I haven't been really blown away by anything that Disney's done with Star Wars yet, because I haven't fallen in love with Rebels like a lot of people have either. And not the same way I have with the Clone Wars. So I'm still giving that time to let it maturate and hopefully become something I love. And so, you know, in the end, it's Star Wars. I want it to be good the same way it was Star Trek. I want it to be good. And so my goal going into it is to love it. Well, guys, just how do you feel about the film now? You know, we've seen a trailer, a teaser trailer, and it sounds like we may actually get the actual trailer for the film with Age of Ultron, you know, which is super awesome. You know, I mean, that looks great. So how do you guys, you know, feel about the film now, especially since, I mean, this year we're going to get some great films. I mean, we just got announced the James Bond film, Spectre, going to be coming out. Jurassic World is coming out. There's a lot of great movies coming out next year. So how do you feel about the film after 88 seconds of footage?
I think this is going to be the only opportunity for us, because it's only 88 seconds, for us to just wildly speculate and slash put in a wish list of what we'd like to see in this movie. And obviously, you know, take this, you know, a little bit tongue in cheek. But for me, growing up, I love the expanded universe. I think, Matt, you probably share that love too. Grand Admiral Thrawn was one of my favorite characters. The fact that he was an Imperial Admiral, the fact that he wasn't Force sensitive, and the fact that he was an alien in an established xenophobic empire. So obviously, I probably am positive there's 0% chance that there's going to be a Grand Admiral Thrawn in this movie. I would absolutely love it if they had somehow managed to fit that in or fit other little tidbits of expanded universe that we've seen before. I mean, I think we're going to see the Jason and Jaina, the Solo twins. I think they're trying to build towards that type of continuity in terms of an older Luke Skywalker, a Jedi mentor. So there's a lot of threads there that potentially, you know, a lot of fans might appreciate as Easter eggs. Maybe Luke is married. Maybe Mara Jade does factor in as a character. But overall, I think for me, this just kind of whet my appetite, because, you know, there is a lot that's left to be said. But from what I've seen so far, I mean, it's definitely nothing that would be a red flag or something that I would immediately kind of disregard. But I think, you know, but that said, you know, the trailer itself had a relatively low bar. So it didn't really have to do much to do that. So it achieved what it needed to do. And, you know, obviously the full trailer is going to say a lot, and it speaks volumes that the actual older cast, Mark Hamill, Carrie Fisher, Harrison Ford, you know, they weren't in this trailer at all. So clearly they're saving that. Clearly they're going to be some sort of opening for them in terms of introducing them to the audience.
John, what do you feel?
Oh, well, I feel that even releasing a trailer, they're going above what they need to do, because we're all going to go see it anyway. I mean, all they need to do is just hand out leaflets or like send out an occasional email and be like, oh, by the way, remember, December 18th, is, you know, they don't even need to waste their time putting together really cool trailers or anything like that. I mean, they're going to get everybody in the universe to come and see this movie. And to speak to, Will, your expanded universe comments, I'm going to say that I was one of those people that when they made that announcement where they were like, expanded universe, I was pumping my fists in the air going, thank you. Praise the Lord. It's done. It's dead. They can ignore it. That's great. Because the worst possible thing that could have happened with this franchise is if they come back with the movies and they feel constrained to stay strictly within these expanded universe novels and creations that have been constructed in the interim. Because the only people that's going to please are the people that have been reading them for decades. That's not going to please, and that's not going to please fans like myself, who eventually got to a point with the expanded universe where we were just like, this is enough. It's done. So, like, you know what? I'll roll it back a little bit. How do I feel about the movie? They very clearly have just thrown the expanded universe out the window. And that's probably the greatest thing about the movie that I have seen to this point, is this is confirmation that they said, okay, you know what? We're all original all the time. Thumbs up. Yay.
I would just say that I agree. I don't think that clearly the new movies can't be constrained by that. I mean, you could feel that the franchise itself is being weighed down by its own continuity. A lot of ways Star Trek has that same issue too. So obviously the reboot kind of resolved that in its own quirky way, we'll say that. I mean, I'm putting it in the best possible terms, trying to have it both ways. I think it doesn't have to be a binary, you know, it doesn't have to be a choice where it's all or nothing. I think they could obviously craft their own original stories, but at the same time, take elements in terms of having, you know, the Solo twins or having a Jedi Praxium or Jedi Academy, those elements, right? Maybe even an Imperial Warlord that's modeled after Thrawn, but isn't named after Thrawn, but those elements of that tactician. I think they could craft that in there without clearly doing that kind of wink and a nod to the fans. I think a lot of fans don't appreciate it. What happened to Into Darkness in terms of just really hammering home those points in a very non-subtle way. Obviously, it's not the preferred way to go, but there is a way to kind of build on what's already there, what has worked, and obviously give it its own spin.
I just to respond to this conversation, because this is actually fascinating. If only Disney had an in-house studio that knew how to take existing characters and storylines and adapt them into crazy popular movies, I think maybe they would be served. My point is that, of course, I agree that they should never be constrained by the extended universe. But Marvel is not constrained by their ridiculous canon that they have built up. And yet every single movie they release is crazy gangbusters popular and busting the doors open at all of these movie theaters. So no, I don't. I agree with both of you guys that Thrawn and Mara Jade and all of these characters, they don't need to follow these paths, but they certainly could take elements. And they wouldn't even have to rebrand those characters. They wouldn't have to readdress those characters. They could just say, hey, there is this crazy awesome tactician. Whatever. I'm not going to rewrite this movie right now. That's not what we're trying to do. But that was the conversation that we were having, and it was just like funny to me to think that Disney has this whole other arm of their empire that does this very thing on a week-to-week basis and creates an entire universe that pays homage to itself without kind of being bogged down by itself, if that makes any sense. In the same way, I'm like you, Matthew, I'm a huge Star Trek 09 fan. I think it's an amazing, amazing, amazing film. And however, I'm not a huge Into Darkness fan. And so to me, I'm split. I don't know what's going to happen. I can see this going both ways. I can see this being one of the best Star Wars films ever. On the other hand, I can see it in the same way, just kind of getting so self-involved and so self-referential and so totally in itself that it's just not going to be entertaining. I'm excited either way, of course. Like John mentioned, we're all going to see it either way, right? It's it doesn't matter what they show us. We're all going to be there opening night. And I just I hope he knows what he's doing, and I think it'll be entertaining either way. I don't think it's going to be terrible either way, but I'm optimistic. I'm optimistic that JJ can pull this off and can at the very least, make a decent Star Wars film, if not a great Star Wars film.
You know what? I want to throw an X factor out there real quick. You know who we all keep, and I mean all, not just the four of us, but everybody in the fan base keeps overlooking, and maybe this is what should make us feel the most at ease about the movie, is that Like we talked about earlier, there have been different directors who have done Star Wars before, and it still felt like Star Wars. It still worked like Star Wars. Kathleen Kennedy is George Lucas's handpicked successor. Maybe we should all be, instead of focusing on, J.J. Abrams, we should be saying, you know what? Lucas handpicked somebody to run this and make sure that the next people do it right. Maybe that in and of itself should make us all sort of unclench a little bit and be like, oh, you know what? Let's give her a chance to prove all of this stuff. I just wanted to throw that in there.
And not only Kathleen Kennedy, but also Lawrence Kasdan is back, and he is helping JJ craft the story, and obviously he worked hand in hand with George on some of the greatest things I've ever seen. Indiana Jones, of course Star Wars. And so this guy has an intimate knowledge of how George's mind works in the same way that Dave Filoni does, and I loved a lot of what Dave does. I mean, just the work he put into Clone Wars, and I think what they're trying to do with Rebels, so I definitely trust the people that George has entrusted Star Wars to on the long haul, not just the short haul here with JJ in Episode 7. John Champion and I were talking just the other night, and he just said something that was really profound to me. He's like, look, JJ is a great starter, and I love that JJ is starting this movie, but he's not doing the rest of the series. He's not doing the other two. And so he's just going to do Episode 7, and JJ knows how to start a film, and he knows how to kick it off, and then somebody else will come and pick that up. And hopefully that means that it's going to be a gangbusters awesome film, because like you, Daniel, a 2009, I just can't find much fault with it. It's a really fantastic movie, and it brought in a whole new group of people into Star Trek, which in some ways Star Wars needs to continue. I mean, it needs the next generation to love this Star Wars movie so that their buy here at Disney pays off. And so, and one of the cool things is that before Marvel came along, and was doing its thing, they were already working, they'd already worked on the prequels, and George liked certain things from the expanded universe. And when he liked it, he would throw it in. So the reason that Aayla Secura was in the films, the blue Twi'lek Jedi, is because George was like looking at a comic book and he was like, hey, I like that. Why don't we just throw that in the movie? Because he liked the look, he liked what they had done. So George wasn't a hater of that. He just, he wasn't going to be beholden to it. And nor should he be. He's the maker. So you can do what you want with it. It's your game. And now these new creators of Star Wars have that opportunity as well. And for that, I'm excited to see new Star Wars. And I just hope that, to me, it lives up. Like John, I didn't hate the prequels. I actually like them a lot. There's things that I would change, yes, but God, what wouldn't I change about just about any movie? There's very few movies I watch and I'm like, I'd never change anything about this film, I think the only films that I can think of like that are something like Empire Strikes Back or Star Wars, the original. There's not really anything I'd change about those movies. I know Drew Stewart right now is screaming at me, but George already changed them. Guys, I just really appreciate you coming on, to talk about this. It's a lot of fun. I mean, it's definitely great to just get to geek out about the wars, because there's so many of us. That's really was our first love. Star Trek came actually later. And so as much as I love Star Trek and it's always there, and I don't compare the two because they're very different, I don't feel like I have to. It's great that Star Wars is going to be back, and it's going to be back on the big screen. And I'm crossing my fingers, hoping it's going to be awesome. So, but that's not the only thing that we've been talking about on Trek FM this week. So here's a quick look at some of the other things you may have missed elsewhere on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
But instead of it being a human being prejudiced against Vulcans because the Romulans look like Vulcans, the Vulcans are taking advantage of themselves looking like Romulans in order to be racist against Romulans.
Earl Grey.
So he's got the two armrests, and the right one says little, ensign, Lamont, and the little arrow, and then the one on the left says Lieutenant Commander Data. Like a little arrow.
The orb.
But when they pull away from that window with Jake and Kira, and they pull away from the station, it's like they're closing the book. They're actually closing the back cover of the book, and it's the end of the story.
To the journey!
How do you feel, Char, about the Borg Queen?
Oh boy. I think
the longer that I have watched Star Trek, the more I'm in the camp of, I don't know if I like her.
The Ready Room.
They want you to come across on Archer's side where he can be mad at Trip. But I have a really hard time being Archer being mad at Trip, because just think of if we still treated, you know, people of a different race like this.
Mission Log, a Roddenberry Star Trek podcast.
That could honestly be the reason they brought Wesley, because Wesley's got nothing else going for him there. I mean, yes, he can lead those kids, but that's just going to be by virtue of his age, right? I mean, he's 15 years old. Of course, all the other kids are going to look up to him, at least for a while. Then if he ends up being a total tool, then they won't.
Commentary, Trek Stars.
Yeah, Learning Curve was never meant to be a season one finale. They were going to do the 37s, and then UPN wanted to open season two with it, and that totally didn't work either.
Man, you gotta say UPN really ooped it up.
Literary Treks.
What Jerry Taylor talks about with Catherine Janeway's life is it's kind of a series of her relationships. I mean, she should be doing all sorts of fantastic things, right? And instead, we're learning about her boyfriends.
Melodic Treks.
But there's a whole host of people that appear in Star Trek. As I said, most of it is classical, so it's Verdi, Vivaldi, Strauss, Troitschke, Harry Kim.
The 602 Club.
This really does have an impact on, I think, the entire, you know, comic book world. Dark Knight, Dark Knight Returns still have a huge impact in the way that people view Batman today.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out these shows and find out what we've been talking about in your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe and beyond. You'll find us wherever you get your podcasts. And if you're an Apple user, be sure to hit that subscribe button. It really helps us out greatly, and it makes it easier for the listeners to find our shows as they search iTunes. But guess what? If you're not an Apple user, we have got you covered as well. You can find our shows on Stitcher, TuneIn, Spreaker, SoundCloud, Windows Phone, and of course, you can stream and download that MP3 file from our website and grab the RSS link as well. Now, guys, it's been great having you here. John, where can we find you online?
You can find me causing all sorts of trouble on Twitter at Kessel Junkie, KESSELJUNKIE. And if you ask nicely, I will even tell you the delightful story of how that became my internet handle oh so many years ago. And you can also find me on the Trek FM network, Commentary Trek Stars, and a little show I do with my buddy Craig, Words with Nerds.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much. And Will, where can we find you?
You can find me at Twitter at Will Win, W-I-L underscore Win, N-G-U-I-N. It's a very unorthodox way of pronouncing Win, but it's Will Win, so it's easy to remember. And I'm in the Babel Conference, and I'm all around the internet talking about geek stuff, talking about Star Wars, the original gateway drug for all things geek. So hit me up there.
And Daniel, where can we find you?
Well, you can find me here on Trek FM every week. We've been talking here about Star Wars: The Next Generation, but you can find me on our Star Trek: The Next Generation podcast, Earl Grey, every week with myself and my co-hosts Philip and Darren. You can also find me on Twitter as well, and my handle there is OneUpDan. That is the number one, not the word.
Another way that you can help us keep all of our shows coming to each week is to become a patron of the network on Patreon. If you visit patreon.com/trekfm, that's patreon.com/trekfm, you can find all of our current goals and different milestone contribution levels, along with all the great perks that we have for you. These perks include early access to content, exclusive content, producer credits, seats on our content development team, and more. And we really appreciate your support. And we really appreciate any support that you can give us, and we hope that you'll join the team. Again, you can find all the details at patreon.com. I'd like to thank our associate producer, Norman Lau. You can find Norman on Twitter at Norman Lau. You can also find him at the Babel Conference. And of course, he's also a big supporter of the Star Trek Axanar podcast, as well as the Star Trek Axanar project. And you can find him on that Facebook page as well. And I really appreciate Norm and his support as our associate producer here at the 602. If you'd like to contact us, you can do that at trekfm/contact. Just choose a show, select the right one there, and it'll send an email to us. you can leave us a voicemail, look in the sidebar on the show page, or go to speakpipe.com/trekfm. You can find us on Twitter at trekfm. We're on Facebook, of course, at facebook.com/trekfm. And you can find us at the Babel Conference, our listeners-only group. Just type the Babel Conference, that's B-A-B-E-L, into the search field on Facebook, or go to our website at trekfm and click discussion on the menu bar. Before we go, I'd like to ask everyone to please support our sponsor who helps bring the 602 Club and all of our shows to you each week. And our sponsor for the show is Audible.com. Audible is a great way for you to read all the books that you've always wanted to read but never thought you'd have time for. And as a Trek FM listener, you can get a free audiobook of your choice with a 30-day trial just to see how great Audible is. Just go to audibletrial.com/trekfm and sign up today. Again, that's audibletrial.com/trekfm, and we thank Audible for their support of the 602 Club and the network. And don't forget to check out Enterprise in Space, a project of the nonprofit National Space Society that will design and launch an 8-foot orbiter and return the craft to Earth. The NSS orbiter will carry more than 100 student-designed science experiments into space, and you can help make that happen. Visit enterpriseinspace.org to find out more and get your seat on the mission. And of course, guys, you can find me on Twitter at MattRushing02. You can also find me doing literary treks with Chris and Dan. They're talking about the books and comics of Star Trek, so I hope you'll join me there, as well as The Orb, where I talk about Deep Space Nine all the time with Christopher Jones as well. And then, of course, you can also find me on my own personal blog at 42lifeinbetween.wordpress.com. And thank you so much for joining us, and may the Force be with you.